From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Chambers of commerce tend to be catch-alls in a community. Yes, of course, they're there to support and build up businesses and economic growth, but they also often act as a kind of go-between, linking the business community with government. In Eugene, the chamber doesn't just provide that conduit, they actively look to bring more business people into the political arena. Today on the show, we talk with the chamber's CEO, Brittany Quick Warner, about this process of recruiting and training business people to become political leaders. Its goal is to provide more diversity of views when it comes to making laws. We also ask her about the chamber's position on the proposed Amazon Fulfillment Center and what it might mean for economic growth in the region. That's next on Oregon on the Record. The old adage, you can't fight City Hall, doesn't hold a lot of sway at the Eugene Chamber. In fact, its view is that you have to join City Hall to make the community work. We talk now with the Eugene Chamber CEO about their program of recruiting business people into politics. Brittany Quick Warner, the president and CEO of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. Brittany, always great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people understand the role of a chamber is to attract and retain businesses in the community, but can you talk about the work that you try and do to sort of integrate the business community in the leadership structure, in the governmental leadership structure?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, our chamber and a lot of chambers across the country, we actually play this really unique role in the communities where we kind of get to sit in between sort of the government and our public partners, nonprofits, and private business. And, you know, we take our role seriously as the connector between those different worlds. And we have for a long time been really active in civic conversations around issues and things that, you know, we believe benefit and or impact the local economy. Our mission as a private nonprofit organization is to improve the local economy. We want to create a community that individuals can find themselves thriving in, right? Economically, health-wise, like there's a lot that goes into creating a healthy community. And so we do step in politically on conversations when we feel like there's a role to play in kind of bringing a business voice, a voice of the private sector. A lot of times we're representing nonprofits. So there's a lot of conversations that we're happy to be a part of.
Yeah. Do you have kind of a formalized program to perhaps recruit business leaders to run for office or join various committees or boards or whatnot?
Yeah. So we have over the last several years really kind of ramped up our efforts to try to make getting involved civically a little bit less intimidating. So, you know, we talk to a lot of folks who they just don't even know where to start, right? And not just business people, but just general, you know, community members. We launched 2 years ago a 5-year strategic economic and community development initiative, Elevate 28, which I came and talked with you a little bit about at that time. And one of those priorities was really trying to improve the overall business and economic climate of the community. And we identified early on that in order to do that, we really need to make sure that the folks who are sitting at these elected tables representing us have a pro-growth, pro-economic development mindset. And so we need more people to run for office who kind of have that experience, that background. And we decided early on we wanted to build up more infrastructure to be able to make that happen more easily.
Okay. I can almost imagine how a conversation might go. You might take a business leader out for coffee and you say, boy, you know, person, I'd love for you to run for office or join this board. And of course, especially small business owners are the busiest people in the world.
Yeah.
They probably say, I'd love to, but I can't because of running my business. How do you kind of maybe, I don't know, maybe twist an arm is the wrong way to say it, but how do you kind of explain how that can possibly work?
Yeah, I feel like most people, their first response is, have you lost your mind? it is not easy to be an elected official. I do not downplay the amount of work that they do.
Sure.
So a lot of those conversations, and this is actually a lot of the discussion I had with the business leaders as we were talking about this initiative, is most folks who, who have run a business, who are trying to sort of manage their own staff and employees and all of the things that goes into running a business, they don't have a lot of time, right?
Sure.
But they have a lot of skill sets. They have a lot of leadership capabilities. They have a lot of expertise in just the economics and the policy landscape that it takes to run a business. They know firsthand the policies that make it a lot harder for them to do what they're trying to do. They know the issues of their employees, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I know intimately the things that my employees are struggling with, especially in small businesses, right? Like you really are kind of a family environment.
Sure.
And so it creates someone who I think actually has a lot of skill sets and capabilities and expertise. And so even if we can get them to think about the act of actually serving an office and sitting in a seat where they're making policy decisions, and maybe I get them close to that, the problem that we ran into is that most people, even if they can imagine themselves in that role, they can't get over the hump of actually running for office.
Yeah.
And it's hard and it's intimidating for people, because a lot of people who you're convincing to run for a small local office are not intending or have any interest in being a career politician, right? And so they don't want to do the politics side of it. They're interested in the policy side of it. And so that piece of it, that getting over that hurdle of actually running for office, is why we decided to step in and create a few different things. But one of them is a political action committee, Lift Lane, that we just launched this last year, which really is intended to create infrastructure to help people run for office and make it a little bit less intimidating. So obviously political action committees allow us to fundraise and provide funding support.
Okay.
But it also allows us to help, you know, have some trained campaign professionals that we're able to work with some of these candidates. It helps us to have better conversations and training with those folks, so they know what to say when they're knocking on doors, mm-hmm. right? They know the issues people care about. They understand the size and scope of the conversations that happen at, say, a local city council or a county commission or a state legislature. And so the training, the resources to actually run for office, we want to provide those just to make it more accessible for the everyday business owner or neighbor or young professional to consider doing that.
Yeah. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Brittany Quick-Warner. She's the president and CEO of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm wondering, looking at your board, you have captains of industry. You have CEOs mostly on your board. But I'm wondering, in this recruitment process, is it sometimes easier and perhaps beneficial that maybe you're not looking for the number one boss, but maybe downline a little bit, because that person might have the time to be able to do this?
Absolutely. You know, we talk with a lot of our business leaders to say, look, what are you doing to encourage your employees to be civically engaged, right? And so whether it's running for office or just encouraging them to vote, there's actually a lot of work nationwide going into really trying to encourage more civic engagement from the workplace. Mm-hmm. I think that it's, a lot of surveys and data show that people do trust their employers. They do trust kind of the private sector, frankly, a lot more than they do government right now, if you're looking at national polling. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a role for employers to play to encourage their employees to be active. And to your point, a lot of times those individuals might have more time and capacity. Talk to a lot of employers who said, I will even like provide the opportunity for my staff to do that by giving them paid volunteer hours or allowing them to, you know, miss work on a Wednesday afternoon for a city council work session. So there's a lot of folks who are really encouraging of that. We just got to get the word out to those people so they know that that the opportunities are out there and that they should consider themselves for it. People are often like, a lot of people are humble. They don't want to think about, oh, I could do that. I could run for office. And so they just need a little encouragement.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, a lot of times a critique of government is, you know, boy, it'd be great if you ran the government more like a business. And I'm wondering, is there some, you know, kind of kernel of that you're looking at saying, well, you know, the idea of a council or mm-hmm. state government having a diversity of interests and skills would be sort of the sweet spot.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I think it's a common nomenclature that businesses just want government to run like a business. I don't think that's very realistic. There's a lot of barriers to public entities running like a business, but there are components that I think could be adopted more widely that would make people feel more supportive of government, right? Mm-hmm. I think government could be a lot more entrepreneurial, right? We tend to be like really stuck in our systems, and we have kind of outdated ways of doing things when we get, you know, years and years of processes and regulatory environment added on top of things. That makes it difficult to be nimble, to be looking at new technologies, to be looking at innovative ways to do things. I think that's something that private industry thrives on, that government could take a, you know, play out of their book. I also think that looking at our competitive advantages and actually analyzing what are our weaknesses, what are our strengths, how do we align our strengths to actually move a community forward? Talking about return on investment, right? That's a huge thing. Our community has a lot of conversation that needs to happen in that way, where it's like, okay, we're running out of money. Our city budget is in the hole, and we have to invest in areas that are actually going to return more for us down the road. And so that's a language that business understands. They understand sometimes you have to, like, it's a little bit of a long game. You have to invest in longer term solutions. And so those types of principles and ideas that come out of the private sector, or the private sector is well versed on, I think having people sitting at that table who understand that can be a benefit. And I'm not trying to say everyone should come from business.
Sure.
It's just a balance and finding a little bit more perspective from individuals who have, frankly, the experience signing the front side of a check. They have some more responsibility. They have firsthand knowledge of the way that our decisions impact local businesses.
Okay. I'm not going to put you on the spot to name any names, but are there characteristics of people you've worked with that you think, boy, take that person and put them in a council chair or in state government? What are some of those characteristics that really spoke to you as people coming from the business community that you think can translate to elected office?
Yeah. You know, we do have a few local races that we've already endorsed in, so I'd be happy to talk specifically about a couple of the candidates. But for us, really, again, it's a pro-growth mindset. So it's understanding that our community has values that we want to uphold, but that we need to be able to say, okay, but how are we going to grow the local economy? How are we going to invest in good businesses and good jobs that people are going to be able to make living wages on? Mm-hmm. And also understanding the network of businesses that exist and that need to exist in order to grow the economy, right? So one example, we have endorsed in this race, but this last year, our board chair, John Borofsky, has decided to run for Eugene City Council.
Ah.
John has a history of engagement in the local community, right? And so something that we really think is an asset is that not only does he have the direct experience of running a small local business, and one that, frankly, you got to really gritty, you're putting a whole lot of time and effort. Small restaurant owners are some of the most just like resilient humans you will ever meet, because they are very difficult businesses to run.
And we should say he owns Beppe and Gianni's,
exactly. Right. But John isn't just like stepping into this out of nowhere, right? He served on the budget committee for years. He served on the planning commission. He's been really active in his neighborhood association. Those are all things that John or elsewhere, we want to find people who have sort of been able to weave this like public engagement and their private sector life together in a way that gives them a lot of experience, right? So John's a good example of that. And because of that, we're trying to go upstream and encourage people to run, or excuse me, to apply for committees and commissions. It's not just about running for elected office.
Sure.
Because you get a lot of experience doing that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. One thing I know that I imagine a lot of our listeners might be thinking, what about nonprofits? Because obviously, yeah, I think sometimes they get short shrift. Like people say, oh, well, that's a separate class. But really, they're business owners just like
absolutely
any other private. Talk about that recruitment effort as well, as people who maybe not selling widgets, but they're basically their product is social services that are so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I like to say that nonprofit is my tax status, not my business plan, right?
Yeah.
There's still a lot of experience that you get running a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
I think really anyone who's got that leadership experience, I think that the difference is, and there's a lot of nonprofits, I mean, the Chamber's a good example,
sure,
where the economy and sort of like growth and business expansion are a focus of that. For us, we just want to make sure it's individuals who see and value this idea of opportunity to grow the private sector as something that is interesting and they think is a value and an asset to the community. And so, I don't care if you come from a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you, you know, frankly, if you have retired or you're, you know, a a mom who got out of the workforce because you're staying home to work with your kiddos for a little bit and then you're coming back into it, like what you're actually doing day to day is a little bit less, I don't know, important to us. It's more the experiences that you have and the value you bring to that idea of growth and an expansion and prosperity for our community.
Okay. Brittany, I want to switch gears on you just really quickly here in terms of there's been news about Amazon coming in with a fulfillment center pretty soon. And I just wanted to kind of get your perspective. We've heard from folks that don't want it and they're forming various organizations to try and stop it. But I wanted to, you know, talk to the business community about what you think a fulfillment center could bring to Eugene and the surrounding community.
Yeah, absolutely. So I understand the issue is complex and folks have a lot of opinions, and that happens in a world where, you know, you have these bigger businesses that have a lot more publicity and you understand kind of ins and outs of how they do their business. What we have, the way that we're approaching this and the way that we're looking at it is from a principled level, we need economic expansion. We need to develop the industrial land that we brought into this urban growth boundary almost 10 years ago now. This land was zoned in a way to support growth and expansion. We need the jobs and we need the infrastructure that it's going to bring. Amazon Fulfillment Center is an example of a type of business that weaves into the ecosystem that we already have here, right? So it's a transportation logistics company, essentially, that we're bringing in here. And what we have a lot of actually businesses in that space, right? We have a lot of distribution companies here. We have a lot of transportation logistics companies. What this does is it provides an entry point for people to get a job and trained in that space that now become a workforce pipeline for some of our local distributors, for our, you know, wood products or manufacturing industry who need drivers, who need transportation talent. And so if you look at it just in itself and singularly, you might not recognize the benefits that having something like that comes and brings to our community. The other piece, and this goes back to the folks that we're looking to run for office, is we need people who aren't going to keep moving the goal line, right? Mm. Because we put regulations in place on that Clear Lake industrial area whenever we brought it into our urban growth boundary. We put the Clear Lake overlay zone, which essentially regulated the type of emissions, the type of essentially operations that we would allow in that space. This business and this use meets all of those expectations. And if it doesn't, then that's the grounds for sort of saying this isn't the right fit. But it meets all of those things. We already set really high standards before we even started the process of bringing businesses into that area. And so for us to move the goal line again, for us to say like, well, you met what we said now, but we want to make it even harder. We are never going to be open and inviting to businesses if we keep changing the regulations before, even if they meet what we said originally. And so that's part of this whole being open to growth is we want to have high standards. We're not saying we want to be the easiest place in the entire world to do business.
Okay.
We hold our standards, but we have to be able to say, okay, if they're going to meet our standards, then we want to open our arms to say, great, come and do business here.
Does it fit in the overall idea of Silicon Shire and the idea that yes, this is maybe not tech in a conventional sense, but of course Amazon is a tech company. Yeah. Does that kind of fit into the idea of this could attract other businesses?
Absolutely. I think having about 650 acres out in the Clear Lake area that is zoned industrial or will be once it's brought in and annexed, each of those properties has done so individually. Someone has to start. And getting that first business off the ground in that space absolutely is going to make it easier for the next business to come, right? So even if it's not specifically adjacent to the technology industry, it is going to make it easier for the next business. We also know that it does open up networks and connections to the tech industry, right? Having an Amazon here in our community locally provides a lot of opportunities for folks, right? It connects to our local tech industry. There's just more resources and more access to companies that we think can be great assets to our community. And so there is an element of, you know, bringing new companies begets new companies who want to come and locate with those places as well. You know, the bioscience industry is one where I learned this principle where you think businesses don't want their competitors close to them. But really what they say is bring more people who do what I do, because that gives me more access to talent. And people are going to move around from business to business. And the more opportunities they have to jump from one bio company to another bio company, then they keep talent here locally instead of they're picking up and moving somewhere else. And so any kind of expansion in the tech and in the kind of innovative spaces that we're trying to grow is a good thing for our community.
She's Brittany Quick Warner, the president and CEO of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. Brittany, it's always great to see you.
Yeah,
thanks for coming
in. Thank you so much, Michael.
Yesterday, we chatted with Eugene Mayor Karen Knutson about the protests in Eugene, and we didn't have enough time to talk about the city's plan to try and replace cahoots. So for the last couple of minutes of the show, we'll provide some time toward that important subject.
This is hot off the presses, as used to be the case, but now is like, you know, burning in emails across the city. The city of Eugene released our request for proposals for new citywide alternative response provider. And this is work that we have been doing over this past 8 months to close the gap that opened in our social safety net when Kahoot services closed in Eugene. So this is a request for proposals, an RFP that is now out in the community for peer navigation alternative response. And this is really important work for us as a community. This is us closing the gap between that exists between our public safety system and our health and human services system. We have Lane County Mobile Crisis present as a resource within our community, and we have, over this past year, that resource has never gone away. But Lane County Mobile Crisis is focused on high acuity needs. And with this peer navigation alternative response focus, what we're really hoping to do is help people who might not be in that high acuity circumstance,
okay,
and who certainly would not be a good fit for law enforcement. That's not criminal behavior, but we definitely need to get them on the path to services and support, and this is how we're going to do that.
That was Eugene Mayor Karen Knutson talking about a potential replacement program for cahoots, and that's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk to a reporter at the Oregon Journalism Project about how lower than expected revenue from legal pot is negatively impacting our mental health programs. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.